This is tape number 6 of the interview with Henry. This is the third session. This is side 1. This is July 16th, 1980. I just asked you before the tape ran out whether or not drugs were available in prison.
Right, and I had answered that to my knowledge they weren't. And I believe that if they were, they certainly weren't available. Thank you. They certainly weren't available to a large number of people. There's no doubt about that.
No,
and particularly Rikers Island. Rikers Island didn't have a large number of drugs of any kind. Pills, heroin, grass, what have you. I don't think it had much of anything coming in.
We just spoke to a black gentleman this morning who had done considerable time on Rikers Island, and that's precisely what he said, that yeah, they were there, but you had to have connections to get them.
Yeah, that's true.
And in his case, I guess he'd run into another man who'd been his connection out on the street, and so he was able to get drugs in prison, but he thought that was exceptional.
I think he's right. He's right. Although later, well, again, it was because I had known these people on the streets, and they had been very close friends, and we had done several little capers together, so that when it did come in, I was automatically cut into a share of it, and I must say it was marvelous, just marvelous. It tasted so good that, you know, I used to laugh and say, man, if it only tasted this good on the street, you know, you'd never leave it.
Absence makes the heart grow
fonder. Grow fonder, right.
When you got out of prison,
yes.
And that would have been either late 1940 or early 1941. Does that sound right?
That's about right. It was in there somewhere. That's the first one.
What did you do then?
Well, I went right back to 42nd Street. I had to start in from scratch again. By that time, I was a little hardened. I wasn't quite as wise as I, or as innocent as I had been. I had to look for some kind of a play, some kind of a routine. Now, I'm probably the world's worst booster. I don't know why that is, I just am. I've boosted, and I still do occasionally. But I am not a good booster, because my nerves just get like that, and I can't, you know, watch everything that's going on. But I can shill like a bastard, you know. I can cover for you or for you. And you can really operate almost wide open, and you'll get, if there's any chance of anybody coming down on you, you'll get a whistle or a call, and you can put it away and be out of the store damn near before the guy knows what has happened. But, you know, that's just lucky. It's not one of those dependable things by any means. But as far as stealing, first of all, I like to steal cash. And I met a guy who had a system for working the supermarkets. I don't know how he managed to get the keys in the first place, but he would. He'd get a set of keys, and he'd pick a morning that say a Thursday morning when there was going to be a certain amount of activity that they could count on. And while somebody was over here busy answering questions, he'd slide up and behind here. Don't ask me how it was done, because I really, for me to explain it to you, it's too difficult. But he could turn that key so that this register was open, the drawer was there. A chick was with you, she had her handbag open, she just scooped it in like that, closed the handbag, and we walked on out. It's as simple as that. I know it sounds crazy, but it was done that way. I worked with him for quite a while.
This is in the early 40s.
Yeah, this is in the early 40s. And how it petered out, I really don't know, except that it got to the place where people were getting jealous. Well, mostly chicks get jealous of their, you know, their boyfriends, and there's always two or three chicks working. You know, they gotta work, they gotta switch. And they usually end up, arguing among themselves, and finally there'd be a big bust-up, and that'd be the end of that. And it got to be pretty nerve-wracking, so I really didn't become a professional by any means on that.
These people you worked with, were they using as well?
Oh, yeah.
Were you using when you got out of prison?
Well, I started in almost immediately. A chick I had known very well was a mule from Peruvia. And how she got started, I don't know.
For coke?
For coke. And she'd bring back coke. And, of course, we turn on right away. Not only coke, but from coke to heroin. And, you know, that would begin the ball rolling.
And you weren't just chipping now. You became addicted.
No, now I'm back, you know, a daily thing, every day.
Now, I have to ask, let's see, this is...
You ask anything you like,
late 40s,
please.
Late 40, early 41. Several people have told us that about this time there was a very serious panic.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah, I want to tell you about that.
Okay, were you... It seems, though, that you, and they've also told us that while they were able to get drugs, you know, morphine or yenshi or whatever it was, heroin became scarce. Was that your experience?
Absolutely. Oh, boy, that's a good one, and I would have missed telling. I wanted to tell it to you, and it slipped my mind completely. I'm glad you brought it up, because it not only began a very strange thing in New York, or is part of a very strange thing in New York, but will open your eyes a little bit. You know where Lincoln Center is now? Well, that used to be San Juan Hill. That was known as San Juan Hill, and it extended all the way from... Was it Lower Manhattan? Does Lower Manhattan reach down that far? I've forgotten. It crosses and becomes 9th Avenue, I guess. And Columbus is either 10th or 9th. One or the other. But that's
right, that's all the way down
right,
the 50s and 60s.
Right. Well, at that time, that was a ghetto that there's never been the equal of. I'm sure of it. I'm really sure of it. It was part of Hell's Kitchen. It included, it included that whole area clear over to West Street to the docks.
Right.
It dropped down to it dropped down to just below 42nd before they started the Port Authority ramps coming in there. That was all sort of vacant territory with the railroad running underneath them. Running underneath. All that was pretty rugged territory.
What ethnic groups lived in San Juan Hills territory?
Well, there were mostly, I guess, since San Juan Hill became the official title, I would say Puerto Rican. Although that doesn't necessarily make it so, because there were hundreds of blacks and there were hundreds of whites of various denominations and nationalities. How would you It was just a conglomeration
of poor people,
that's right. And they were poor. I mean, poor. You couldn't walk. Well, they patrolled the outside of it sort of like this. Cops simply would not walk in there without a partner, you know, for any distance. You could go. Now, a lot of the buildings had been nailed up tight, but you could start in, we'll say, at the corner of, about 10th Avenue and, maybe the 60th or 61st. You could start in there and you couldn't penetrate the area itself. It was there, you knew it was there, but there were old grannies hanging around, there were whores of every size, shape, color, and description. There were flaming, you know, queens. There were tough guys who, you know, would greet you paring their nails with a knife. It was really pretty rough territory. Now, it had been long a sore spot in the city administration. Also, Welfare Island had, they'd finally decided that Welfare Island was a long way from being legal in its concept or even in its, you know, in the way it was run. It was controlled, as the story goes, by the Irish mob, the Italian mob, the Jewish mob, the black mob. These were the various people that controlled it. I've heard tales to the effect that you could get an old lady in there if you wanted her for a couple of hour lay or something like that. How true that much of it is, I'm not sure of. But I do know that drugs were in there. And you could, for almost any amount of money, you could get almost any amount of junk you wanted. Do you remember those metal cigar containers?
Oh, yeah.
They used to load those up with whiskey. Those were sold for so much. It was a going business. Now, the whores, this was back in the days when the whores were tricking for $2 and $3 just as fast as they could, and they could trick. They were working 7th Avenue, and they were working Broadway. So far they had been lucky because most of their pimps were not only their pimps, but they were their suppliers, you know, for junk. Baffo, from out of nowhere, they cracked down, and the next thing you know, there were hardly any heroin pushers on the street.
When was this, in the early 40s?
You gotta look that up in dates, because I'm still very confused. It happened so fast and was so confusing.
Is this connected in your mind with the panic?
The first panic?
The World War II panic.
Well, I wouldn't connect it with the World War II panic. The World War II panic came after that. The World War II panic this was a separate panic. It's when they cleaned up the whole shebang. The next thing they did, they tried to get rid of all of the heroin pushers, and they were pretty successful. Nobody had thought of pushing morphine. Nobody had thought of pushing Dilaudid or Pantopon. Those were still in the offing. What the people did during the day, I don't know, but I do know that several guys that I knew were scuffling around looking for doctors to write prescriptions. And those that were successful enough were doing pretty good. My boy, I was working with a guy named Eddie, and Eddie was one of those lucky fellas.
Is this the cash register man, the same person?
No, that was another guy. That guy's name was Guy. No, Eddie was a different set.
What did you do during this panel?
Well, I was, as I say, I was hanging around mostly with Eddie, doing making deliveries for him, for example. He had a lineup of whores that be waiting on the corner for certain number of bags. I'd stop by. Sally, how many do you want? She'd name it. How many you want, Inez? She'd name it, blah, blah, blah. I'd take their bread. I'd, you know, go back, see Eddie. I'd come back and deliver. That was my scam at that time. It didn't last very long, but it lasted long enough for me to get my hands in. Anyway, what I wanted to tell you is that the next, or before that had happened, we had cracked the doctors for morphine, as you must have gathered, and Dilaudid and Pantopon. And there were a number of old-timers that dated back to the days when I really don't know who started the drug scene on the Lower East Side. I've been told it was the Jewish mobsters, then the Italians, but I don't know. The blacks were just about the last to get in. I can remember hearing blacks say, man, anybody'd stick a fucking needle in his arm's gotta be insane any minute. excuse me. Anyway, that started things moving in a different direction. So Eddie and I started making doctors just as fast. We'd spend as much of the day as we could trying to contact doctors. What he did was give me a spiel. I used to go in and tell the doctor that I had been traveling with my mother and father down through Florida, through the Everglades, and that I had contracted a very bad case of colitis, and that I still suffered from the abdominal pains, and that the doctor had died, and I had no place to turn to get a prescription for, you know, relief. Oddly enough, it worked. These doctors were all pretty wise. Well, imagine. And later on, they were running pretty much wide open. But anyway, that's how the doctors got going. But what it did do was clear out that San Juan Hill district. They really went in there. They discovered that you could enter, say, as I started to tell you before, at 66th and 10th Avenue and never have to look at the street again until you were at 78th and the railroad track.
68th.
Well, all right, 68, wherever, you know. They could shoot down, around, under the ground, through old buildings, you name it. There were people shacking up there, you know, what did they call them? Mudders, I guess, or something like that.
These doctors that you made, were they older doctors or younger doctors?
Some of them were older and some of them were younger. We were very lucky. See, Eddie was strictly a Brooklyn man. He knew Brooklyn from A to Z. And he knew it much better than I did. And he, for some reason or another, I think he was embarrassed by knowing me. I really think that was the reason I didn't get to know Brooklyn better through Eddie. I think he was sort of embarrassed by my language, by my manners. He introduced me to a couple one afternoon for smoked eel. We had smoked eel in this apartment. Now I happen to I liked it, surprisingly enough, but I really had to force myself to eat it because it's carnivorous and it eats anything else that wiggles, I guess, or it doesn't have to wiggle. So I'm told, I don't know. At any rate, I kind of like it and I now eat it. But in those days, I didn't know that much about it. That was part of his introduction to Brooklyn to me. But he was going with two or three girls lined up, and we handled them very nicely, and we lived very comfortably. We kept ourselves going, say, for about not quite a year out of that. Then I took my second fall. And this one, of course.
Let me go ahead and put